When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin and how did they end? Let's find out on episode 94, the Esarhaddon Treaties.
This is going to be great.
Oh my gosh, here it goes. This is what this has all been building up to, right?
Yep. Egypt has been living around the Nile in peace for a very long time. It has been many, many hundred years since an enemy came into the Egyptian heartland. So You can't really blame Takarta here for feeling safe.
I mean, especially from the outside world, right? From outside of Africa.
Yeah, the last people to invade Egypt were the Hyksos.
Yes. And I mean, I guess you got the Sea Peoples, but they weren't really much in a full invasion, right? The Sea Peoples?
Yeah, they were a foreign invasion of Egypt, but the Egyptians crushed them.
I mean, a full invasion. I knew they were a full invasion. Yes, they did crush them. Ramses.
Egypt is feeling strong and safe.
And they have a new king. I mean, because they actually have a new set of kings. They have the Kushite kings.
We talked about how Pi took all of Egypt. And this dynasty has been doing great. They also control Kush, of course. So it's an empire.
Correct.
And they are probably the second most powerful kingdom outside of the Far East.
Right. Going on now, but you see that's been going on since the 700, right? So it's like a great power struggle with the people in the middle, you know, as pawns. Well, proxy war type of things.
Yeah, we've seen the Egyptians try to do stuff in the Levant, but now they have been doing it a bit too much.
Mm-hmm. So all these things that have been happening, right? Like just like we just left off with the sack of Ascalon. Why would they rebel against the Assyrian Empire, right? Well, the Egyptians said, hey, we got you. Go ahead. Let's get it started. But it didn't work out for them.
It didn't work out very well. No. So let's see how it works out for Egypt.
Well, actually, a little bit before, I know we mentioned that we said that they advanced to the Brook of Egypt and stuff. But so there was their first shot at it, Assyria, they don't talk about it much because they don't want to. They most likely lost to Taharqa and his forces their first time that they tried in the mid-670s. So now we got, right, Esarhaddon made a peace treaty with Elam. He took care of some business around the other areas. He took care of the Arabs so that he can get across the desert, and now he's coming.
Good news for the Cimmerians, probably.
Probably.
But look at how attractive the Cimmerians are as an enemy compared to the Egypt. because the Cimmerians have nothing. So you only fight them defensively to keep them away from you.
But right.
Egypt is full of riches. This is a prize.
It is a prize, and it'll just stop him from messing around with all his areas, you know, in the Levant there.
Yes.
That's the plan. Okay, but we were, right, we were at 673, I believe we left off. Is that right? No, we left off in 674.
Yeah.
So the actual invasion, it's coming. So we had say that. It doesn't happen yet in 674. So yes. We're on 673, and that doesn't happen yet, because there is something in between there that's kind of a big deal, too, that we're going to get into.
Okay.
So, because on 673, it's a Babylonian chronicle, the eighth year, on the sixth day of the month, Aduru, the king's wife died.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, and on the 18th day of the month, Adaru, the army of Assyria captured Subria and sacked it. And we're going to talk about that a little bit, too.
And Adaru was February, March, right?
Adaru?
I think it was.
Is February, March, harvest broadbeams, indeed. So Esarhaddon didn't take another queen. That was his queen, and he didn't take another one. His mother, Nakia, was a very powerful woman, and she became the queen mother.
Oh.
So, and did you know that the Assyrian queens had their own standing army?
I had no idea.
That is amazing. I found that. I was like, well, what? It's like Cersei has her own army, right?
When did that happen?
Way back, like Tiglath-Pileser. I like the worst pronunciation.
Pilsner is a sort of beer.
I know. Pilsner Urquell.
That would explain a lot.
Well, you know who I mean. Tiglath-Pileser.
Yes.
Back then, yeah. And then, they had their own army. I actually wonder if maybe that's how Esarhaddon got, you know, in the power so easily. Maybe his mom had the, you know, she wasn't the queen, Nakia. She was a wife of Sennacherib. She's Esarhaddon's mother, very powerful woman. She took over the duties of the queen after Esarhaddon's wife died.
Yeah, if she wasn't the queen of Sennacherib, she was probably a favorite consort and definitely had Sennacherib's ear.
Yes.
So I think she was very influential in the decision to get Esarhaddon into the crown prince position.
She's supposedly a beautiful woman. She kind of reminds me of Olympus, right? Alexander the Great's mother.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe she looked like.
Maybe she did.
She's a powerful person. I mean, you could write a whole book, a movie about her, right? About Nakia. She became the queen mother. And Esarhaddon now starts to realize he's also mortal, right? Because Assyrian wives are probably much younger than the husbands. Probably like 15 years. That was sort of the tradition. So Esarhaddon is older now. And we're going to talk about it too, that he wasn't very well. So in the next year, something happens is where he makes sure that his son becomes the next king. What's the word I'm looking for, Dan?
I don't know.
The transition to power. Succession.
Yes.
Yes, he's making sure that his succession is taken care of. Esarhaddon is very religious, and so the death of his wife is also a, you know, big deal for him.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a little sidetrack on this other thing that happened this year, though. Is that okay?
Okay, go ahead.
On the 18th day of the month, of Aduru again, the army of Assyria captured Subria and sacked it. Okay, so I was like, where is Subria? That was one of those deals, right? I'm looking, and boom, I find it. It's like Dungeons and Dragons, ancient city.
Okay, where is it?
It's in the mountains. It's in way eastern Turkey today, sort of that border of Urartu and then Urartu and Assyria. It's kind of like Switzerland. It's its own kingdom, and everybody leaves it alone. The old kings of Assyria left it alone. They helped out Assyria. They would give information about Urartu. But the deal is, it was a safe haven for refugees, like political refugees, murderers, all kinds of people, you know, deserters from the army. And it was by the religion that they couldn't turn them over. So this was like this special city that you were not allowed to touch.
Amazing.
Right? Totally amazing. It was a safe haven, like you say, right? It was protected by the mountains. But how about this, too? It's on the Batman River. There's a Batman River? How that's like...
What?
And I found it on Google Maps, too. It's like, if you find this, this little settlement that they think was this kingdom, and this was probably the one city in it, is it's on the Batman River in Turkey.
Batman.
So, Subria is really just means Northland in Sumerian and Assyrian. So they did dispatch tribute, emissaries, and intelligence reports, like I said, to Assyria.
Being a good vassal?
Yeah, it was a good vassal, right? There was like this underground railroad where people could, you know, escape. And there's letters. Like, you find these letters where they're like, I'm sorry, we can't, you know, we can't let them go. Because why won't you do it? Well, the gods. I can't do it because I'll be punished by the gods.
Good reason.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're superstitious like such. But, I mean, I would probably listen to Esarhaddon and then the gods, but... they thought, I don't think, it not doesn't isn't really, but they thought that this area was the base of the Tigris River.
Yeah.
So that's usually a religious place in a lot of these old religions where a river starts, that's, you know, a special place of the gods. So that's kind of why. So yeah, here's the from one of the letters that was mentioned before. It says, a conversation between an Assyrian governor and the king of Subria. I asked the Subrian, why do you seize deserters from the Urartan king fleeing to Assyria and settle them in the city? Why do you protect these deserters and not give them to us? His reply, I fear the gods.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Wow.
Great.
It is like Switzerland. It's high in the mountains. Mm-hmm. It's independent. Mm-hmm. People respect it.
Mm-hmm. What does Esarhaddon do? Haddon? He destroys it.
Oh, no. Yeah. All good things must end.
There is. I mean, I like to put this letter, the letter that's translated into the notes, because the Esarhaddon writes a letter to Assur, which is kind of interesting, right? He writes a letter to the god Assur. And yeah. I think it's maybe sort of saying like, hey, I had to do this, right? But if you know, he brags about how the king pleads for his life. A couple times he asked the king, says, listen, you got to give me these, you can't hold these prisoners. Some people think it might have been his brothers, the ones who rebelled against him in the beginning. Because he was probably after them the whole time. You know, we think, well, that's over. But he knows these guys are out there, and we don't know if he ever got them or not.
So, it sounds like a good place to hide. So
yeah, right. Where else would you hide? You know, they also people think they were hiding in Urartu because they would protect them there. But we don't know. So he talks about how he captured the city. So he built his siege ramp. And the Syrians put naphtha on the siege ramp. That's like gasoline and like napalm, kind of. And they lit on fire, but then the wind, it blew the fire back and burned up the city.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and then he killed everybody, and that was the end of Switzerland in the ancient days.
No, I just started to like it.
Right?
Then it went down.
Right. I thank you for like having, because this period of history I hadn't studied, and I've been studying it. I just enjoyed it so much. I really do. I hope the listeners do, because that is just such an interesting little deal to me, to find this little city on the Batman River that, you know, hid these prisoners and murderers and deserters. It just reminds me like Dungeons and Dragons or one of those old movies, you know? You could just see these. We got to get to Subutu. We'll be safe.
Yeah, I'm thinking of early Rome as well, if, according to legend. And,
that's true. That's
everybody true. Was an outlaw, who had nowhere else to go.
That's right. That's right. That's where, you know. And bringing that last part out, I'm sorry, on a sidetrack, but it's the Subrians practiced the art of augury, which is a way to predict the future by studying the patterns of birds in the sky. And this continued after this destruction. And I remember learning that the Etruscans also practiced this.
Well, of all the weird ways of predicting the future, this is, has at least have some relevant information, because birds are going to Africa. That probably means it's winter.
Oh, well, that kind of future too. But I think they mean like the patterns. Like, oh, if it's that kind of pattern, that means that, you know, your wife is going to have a boy.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
kind
what
of
they
stuff.
Mean.
Mm-hmm. I mean, human beings are big on cause and effect. So it's like, oh, well, if the birds look like that and there was a rainstorm, then the next time the birds look like that, there's going to be a rainstorm.
Yeah, we'll encounter a lot of stupid ways of trying to predict the future in ancient history. Mm-hmm. And that's not over Indeed. With the Subrians.
No, no, it's, you know, people still do it today. We have tarot cards and all that stuff. So that's Subria.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for finding that.
You're welcome. Thank you for allowing me look for it. And then 672 now is a big year.
All right.
I hope we even get to Egypt here, because this is like scholarship all over, you know, scholarship up the wazoo, we would say in Scranton here about the Esarhaddon succession treaty. This was a big deal. There's a lot of scholarship on this. There's a lot of information. We have the copies of the treaties. There was nine found, and then a 10th one most recently was found in 2009.
Wow.
And it was it's a treaty, the succession treaty, the saying that his sons, Ashurbanipal, was going to be the king of Assyria, and they're splitting it up. And then his other son is going to be the king of Babylonia. So he's dividing the kingdom.
Ooh. Well, he's probably not, because it's a way of putting an Assyrian as a king of Babylon so that Babylon has a proper king. But he's still subservient to the king in Nineveh.
Well, that will cause problems in the next decade.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We should
That's
probably
not
mention,
how he took it.
We should probably mention that this was a plan earlier, but it involved the crown prince, Sin-iddina Apla, who died in 672.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the guy who was supposed to rule the empire, but he dies. And then Shamash-shum-ukin, the second son,
nice.
Who was destined to be the... He was... designated to be the ruler of Babylon. He remains the ruler of Babylon, but the younger Ashurbanipal becomes the crown prince to inherit the empire. So Shamash-shum-ukin is kind of bypassed here by this younger half-brother.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't cause any problems, would it?
No, I doubt it.
No.
I'm sure they're fine. They like to get along famously forever. It's always a good idea to divide your empire, isn't it? I've always seen every time a king divides his empire before he dies, nothing ever happens bad.
No, nothing ever.
No, always lasts.
This succession treaty is the longest Assyrian treaty known, which is quite fascinating. And it's full of fearful curses.
Oh my God, can you read some of them for me, please? I mean, they're serious, but they still crack you up. Here, yeah. You're there. May Ninurta fill the plain with your blood and feed your flesh to the eagle and the vulture.
Can I do the next one?
Please, please.
May Ishtar make your wives lie in your enemy's lap before your very eyes.
Instead of grain, may your sons and daughters grind your bones.
Bathe in blood and pus as in water.
Nice. May tar and pitch be your food. May donkey urine be your drink.
That should be pretty scary if you then break this treaty and then suddenly you're this wine tastes like donkey urine. How can that be? Oh, no. It's the gods.
The treaty. Damn.
I should have broken the treaty.
So funny. It's like, like I read the treaty. Like, they'll take you half an hour to read it. It goes on and on. And written in cuneiform, marking on these little tablets. I could just imagine them reading it.
Imagine the life of this treaty breaker. He's sitting there with this drink of wine, and it turns out to be donkey urine, and he's looking over the room, and is that my wife in my enemy's lap? And it's like, so, hey, sons and daughters, how are you doing grinding the grain? Hey, what are you doing with my bones? Shut up, Dad. Take a bath in blood and puss. And then some eagles and vultures show up and take your eyes. And
oh, my God. I mean,
then you really regret breaking the Treaty of Esarhaddon.
Don't break the Treaty of Esarhaddon, for sure. I mean, right? It goes on and on like that. There's a bunch of them when they're like that, like just over and over. Like, it's like a legal, like, I don't want to miss anything. Look back to Monty Python. It's like the holy hand grenade. Count to three, not five. Make sure you, it's like everything. And then it's got like, if any of your uncles or your brothers or your cousin or anybody in the line or any eunuch or anybody should malign Assurbanipal, the great crown prince designate, speak evil things about him, then all these things should happen to you. Then you should kill them. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And like I said, there was 10 copies of them that we know of. Yeah. And they were all over the empire. And there were ceremonies to do this. Like, this is how he wanted to make sure that there was not going to be, he wasn't going, his sons weren't going to have the same problem he had when his succession came. And it's sort of similar because the other crown prince had recently, you know, they changed who the crown prince was going to be, and obviously there was going to be some, you know, trouble. So he went all over the empire to all his governors, to all the client kings, everywhere. And this was a treaty signed by Assur. There's three seals on it. There's a new seal, then there's a 700-year-old seal, and a 1,000-year-old seal of Assur. So this is like, because the king is the representative of Assur on earth, and this comes from Assur, that Assurbanipal and his brother, this is the succession. Any of these other things, you're going to be drinking donkey urine, because that's the deal. And it was literally put in temples and worshipped as a covenant.
Wow.
So that reminds me of another covenant, getting back to my, you know, the Old Testament. There was a covenant in the temple that was, you know, the Ark of the Covenant from Yahweh, right? Yeah. So this was a thing in the Middle East where these were actually the God's orders and, you know, put in the temple. And they just found out, realized this because the tablet that they found in 2009 was smashed in a temple. Wow. And it was found where it would have been displayed in the temple. And that's how they realized this was a, you know, so this was a big deal. I mean, you can go, we could talk for years about this. I'm sure these, scholars, they do. And there's even, in the Bible, Deuteronomy, there's two parts in Deuteronomy. There's two passages, 13 and 28. They sound just like it. It's curses, the whole business. You know?
Yeah. Assyrian curses have been a part of treaties.
But Yahweh will do it to you, all these terrible things, if you break this, you know, treaty. So I find it so interesting. I hope our listeners do as well.
Wow.
So yeah, so I'll post that, I'll post the full text of the treaty. You could read it. I mean, it might put you to sleep at some points, but you'll get a good, you know, about these curses. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Lots of them.
Amazing.
So so Assurbanipal, he's going to be the crown prince of Assyria, and the brother, Shamash-shum-ukin, is supposed to be he's going to be the ruler of Babylonia. Karen Radner says that they're twins. I don't see that anywhere else, but she says they're twin brothers, which I don't know. Maybe we have to bring her on to talk about that too.
Yeah, I always had the impression Shamash-shum-ukin is older.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing too. When I was looking for him, I found there's like a website, genie.com, which is like genealogy. You could put your name in there, your picture in there, and stuff. Somebody put Shamash-shum-ukin in there, like they claimed him like as them.
Good.
It's really funny. But so, yeah, that's the treaty of the Esarhaddon succession treaty. Like I said, it's a big deal. It was a big tablet. The tablets were big. You know, they were bigger than normal cuneiform tablets. They were written on two sides, a couple pages, like horizontally. It's a big deal.
Must have been a lot of work to produce one of these, and there were probably hundreds.
Oh, and you, when you read it too, like the way parts, it'll say ditto, ditto. It's almost like Esarhaddon is like reading it to the scribe, and he's like punching it in and cuneiform. You know, it's like one letter is like seven, and he's punching it in, and, you know, mark it in, and he's like, and also if your brother and your cousin, and the scribe just puts ditto.
So who is this guy that Esarhaddon is so intent on becoming his crown prince? Who is Ashurbanipal?
Ashurbanipal is the third son, born in 686. His name means Asher is the creator of an heir. So the Hebrew Bible calls him Asenapar.
That's the first Assyrian king, I think, we know the birth year for.
I think so, yeah. Oh. He's the youngest son, and we will learn a lot about him because he obviously will become the... Well,
he's not the youngest son, right? If he's the third son.
He's the third son. You're correct. I'm sorry. Oh. And his mother is Nakia, which is important because his mother is, you know, like I said, she's that powerful woman. And the queen mother, the original queen mother, is dead.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a big deal inside. You just, like I say, if you think of Game of Thrones, you know, and it's sort of like, yeah, Cersei was, maybe she was number two, and then the other one's gone, and now she's in charge, and she's going to make sure her son is the one.
There is one important thing to know about Ashurbanipal above all others, and the reason that he stands as a statue outside of the city hall in San Francisco. He was not meant to be the crown prince, so he picked another career that no Assyrian king ever picked before him, because they couldn't. He became a scribe, and he is now the first Assyrian crown prince ever who is able to read and write himself. So you couldn't get away with writing ditto on your on your cuneiform tablet, right, if he is the one dictating, because he knows how to read and write.
Right.
And that is a special power he will put to good use.
Yes, we find his library, right?
Yeah. But we'll talk so much about Ashurbanipal in upcoming episodes. I think that's all we need to say about him now.
Yes, but he will be important. But that's pretty interesting that he could read and write cuneiform.
Yeah, and he's the last of the great Assyrian kings.
Mm-hmm. That is true. True, true, true. So, and we will run into him again very, very soon.
So now we made an entire episode about this, right?
Yes, I know. The next one's going to be great because Taharqa, he's kind of more well-known than some of these other characters. So I think you're going to know about
him. He's going up against pretty stiff opposition here.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
The greatest army in the world.
Mm-hmm. But I bet if you put Taharqa versus Esarhaddon in man-to-man combat, I'm pretty sure Taharqa would probably wipe the floor with him.
Probably.
All right.
So, give us reviews on iTunes if you can. We very much appreciate that. Reviews on iTunes make the podcast more visible. You can find us on Facebook. There is a Fan of History page, and that's a good way to message me and Bernie. So, thank you for this episode. Next time, we will deal with Egypt versus Assyria.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, now it comes down to the showdown.
In the desert.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just $1 an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.